on the ball here.
I will open the Senate Committee on Rules for March 13, 2009. We have only two items on the agenda. They're both only on for public hearing only at this time. I do not have anyone signed up. I'm going to open a hearing for SB 30. I do not have anyone signed up. This would be probably about the, I don't know, what, the seventh or so public hearing we've had on 30. Is there anyone that wants to say anything about SB 30? Seeing none.
Interest is waning, isn't it? People are tired out.
I'm going to open a public hearing on SB 597, ask the committee administrator to give a brief overview, and for the people in the audience, indicate that we can open, actually we now have a quorum, but we can open without a quorum for public hearing, so we have a quorum now. And so we're going to open a public hearing on SB 597, and if you please give a brief overview.
Yes. Senate Bill 597 requires members of the governing body of certain non-governmental entities to file statements of economic interest with the Government Ethics Commission. It also subjects those same entities to Secretary of State audit for funds collected through public purpose charges as described in ORS 757.612. You also have in front of you dash two amendments also submitted by Senator Metzger, the sponsor. The dash two amendments, I was going to hand engross them in your bill, but they're basically a rewrite of the two main sections. They clarify that entities above do not refer to public utilities, and they also clarify that the requirements apply to entities who are directed by the Public Utility Commission to invest monies in public purposes. And you also have testimony in your packets that was provided by Senator George.
Okay. Senator Metzger, since you're the chief sponsor of the bill, did you have anything you wanted to say?
Yeah, I would. If I could just kind of introduce the bill from up here, that would probably be fine with me, if it's okay with you, Mr. Chair.
Yes, that would be fine.
In our whole discussion, colleagues, on ethics and transparency, over a period of time, the issue of the Energy Trust of Oregon came up, and I remember calling Mr. Brunson from the Ethics Commission and asked whether, because they deal with over well, hundreds, they have in the last few years, millions of dollars of public monies, whether they, the members of the governing board, filed SEI forms for their personal conflicts, and also subject to the conflict laws, et cetera, and the Secretary of State Audits Division. And the answer came back, they were not. They were organized as a 501c3 and were kind of caught in the loophole of public monies. It's interesting, all three of us here on the dais were here in 1999 when Senate Bill 1149, which ended up being the generating piece of legislation for the Energy Trust, was created. That went through my business committee. I remember carrying that bill with Senator Beyer, now the head of the Public Utility Commission. And that's where the 3% public purpose charge was created. And it directed the PUC to expend those monies and gave them some latitude to how they might do that. There's three primary users of the public purpose charge, which in 09-11 is projected to be, incidentally, the public money from that is $175 million. One is educational service districts, which of course are already covered under the public officials laws and conflict laws. The Oregon Housing and Community Services Department, likewise, but the bulk of the money goes to a nonprofit Energy Trust of Oregon. What Senate Bill 597 does is to realize much of the discussion that we have had, and that is that those who are expending public monies of any kind, but particularly of the magnitude that this has grown over the years, and you can see in just 7 years it's grown from $30 million to $124 million in a biennium, and is well on its way to $200 million in the next 5 or 6 years, that the public has a right to know about the any potential conflicts and transparency of those who are expending those funds. Now, Senator George is not here, and he has a separate piece of legislation, and I don't want to go into those details, but he did provide the committee with just an idea of why this program is very significant. And some of the major corporate or industrial folks who have received checks from the Energy Trust of Oregon. You know, Fred Meyer's $500,000 just this last year, or Intel $250,000, and these decisions are made by the Board of Directors. What Senate Bill 597 does is a number of major things which conforms them to others who are entrusted with public monies. First of all, it makes every member of the governing body subject to the provisions of the Statement of Economic Interest, so we know what their economic interest is in dealing with these public monies. It also, in addition to filing those forms, also then makes them subject to the same gift limitations that we are all under as they deal with the different entities that they may be asked to give checks to for energy efficiency, and so that they would be subject to those same type of limitations. It also, in this bill, makes it clear that these are subject to the audit divisions of the Secretary of State. As you know, both with the ESDs and the Oregon Housing and Community Services Department, those monies that go there are subject to the potential aspect of auditing by the Secretary of State, but the largest forms of money, the Energy Trust, are not. So this simply is a what we think is a good government bill, making sure that visibility. Right now, the Energy Trust reports its financial statements to the PUC, but we do not have any reports about the conflicts, potential conflicts, or vested interests of those who are making the decisions. Finally, I would point out that the members of the board, which is another interesting issue that I think can be dealt with here, is a self-appointing board, which is very unique. They're not appointed by the governor, confirmed by the Senate, or anyone else. They were formed, and if someone leaves the board of directors of this now multi-hundred million dollar trust, that the members simply appoint themselves and to replace that. There is not a public process involving the legislature or the governor or anyone else in appointing those members. So that also, I think, is a serious question that needs to be addressed. So this is simply a visibility that would conform a very large piece of public dollars into transparency. The amendment, what the amendment does, Mr. Chair, is just clarify that we're talking about what essentially is the Energy Trust of Oregon. Receive public monies, that is a clarifying category, and the reason that was necessary is that the utilities retain a few cents from the public utility charge themselves in order to administer the collection of the funds, and we wanted to make it clear that we weren't talking about the governing body of Pacific Core or PG. We're talking about those who are actually expending the dollars.
Okay. We will go to public testimony. I only actually have one person signed up, but I have a lot of people in the audience. So, Mr. Bissonnette, if you would come forward. And Mr. Bissonnette, while you come forward, I did want to apologize to you because I've been looking for things to assign to this committee so I could have more hearings on SB 30. And I didn't realize that I'd actually had assigned this one for today because I don't have many hearings left, actually, for this committee over the course of this session. But we still have a lot of work to do on SB 30. So this, obviously, is relative to SB 597. So, Mr. Bissonnette, just please proceed at your leisure.
So, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jeff Bissonnette, representing the Citizens Utility Board of Oregon. We are a private nonprofit organization ourselves. However, we exist in state law created by Oregon voters back in 1984 as the representative of residential ratepayers. And so I am here today in not opposition to the spirit of the bill, but to the bill itself, and mainly with questions. And I'm sure the bill sponsor and perhaps other members of the committee will be able to engage in allow some dialogue on the issue. Our main issue here is, and with all due respect to Senator Metzger, who I've worked on with other pieces of legislation, particularly Senate Bill 408 and the utility tax issue back a couple of sessions ago, is that the public purpose funds are not public money. They are not tax money. They are not taxpayer money. They are ratepayer money collected through rates paid by ratepayers to essentially buy power, either primarily through energy efficiency projects, and so what we are doing is we are buying savings and reducing the energy usage and doing and buying that power at a rate much cheaper than it would be to build another power generation plant. The Energy Trust right now is acquiring energy savings at about 2 cents a kilowatt hour. Traditional fossil fuel based resources will go anywhere from 5 cents to up to 7 cents a kilowatt hour. Wind is a little bit more than that. And so, again, it's a I'm sure many of you have heard me say that the cheapest power is the power that you don't have to produce in the first place, and that is the primary mission of the Energy Trust. The second mission and the way it buys power with ratepayer money is by helping the development of renewable energy projects. And it used to be that it was all size of renewable energy projects. Last session we made a change, and when we passed the renewable energy standard of the 25% by 2025, we recognize that that policy would encourage the utilities to invest in utility scale, primarily large scale wind projects, and that the public purpose dollars should be focused on smaller projects. And so the mission stayed the same, it was just the size of the projects, so that the money was not diluted, in fact, was used more effectively. The Energy Trust, one of the reasons that the Citizens Utility Board pushed for the creation of an independent nonprofit organization to manage these monies is because we were frankly dissatisfied with the way the utilities had run similar programs for the previous 25 or 30 years. We did not think that ratepayers were getting the biggest bang for the buck for dollars spent on energy efficiency. And there's a simple reason for that, is because asking utilities to run energy efficiency programs is an inherent conflict of interest. What you're asking them to do is help their customers use less of the product they're in business to produce and sell. And so we decided that it was a better approach to split that function and put the money in the hands of a separate entity whose only mission it was is to get the biggest bang for ratepayer buck in energy efficiency. As Senator Metzger rightly pointed out, the law that created the public purpose charge basically gave authorization that if the PUC saw fit, it could put that administration of those funds in the hands of a separate independent entity. There was actually a process that looked around for some other entity like the Northwest Energy Efficiency Alliance, other organizations that were already in existence doing similar work, but it was determined that there was no one organization doing this work, and that's why the Energy Trust was created. There is a level of transparency and a level of accountability that has been in place with the advent and the startup and the operation of the Energy Trust that is unprecedented from when the utilities were running it. There are policies in place for the board members of the trust to declare conflicts of interest and to have those listed and on file. There are already a broad range of auditing and other financial accountability requirements simply by being a nonprofit organization that any 501c3 organization has to go through. And so the question is you know, the Energy Trust is a nonprofit organization, and there are other nonprofit organizations that benefit from public funds. I don't think we want to put all nonprofit organizations under the same umbrella that the commission, Columbia Gorge Commission, is under other public bodies that are listed in the statute. If the Energy Trust were to be put in this statute, it would be the only nonprofit in that list that I can tell. As a ratepayer advocate, we believe that the PUC oversight is extensive and rigorous. The amount of information available on the Energy Trust website, not just about its programs, but but it's the minutes of its Board of Directors meetings, the presentations made to the Board of Directors meetings, the minutes from the Conservation Advisory Council, the Renewable Advisory Council, all of whose meetings are open to the public, all of whose meetings minutes are posted to the website, all of whose presentations are posted to the website, all of their financial information, their annual audits, the PUC benchmarks that they are required to maintain in order to maintain their funding from the PUC. The PUC can decide that the Energy Trust is not functioning adequately and can defund the organization tomorrow. And so we are very happy as ratepayers with the operation of the trust, and without better understanding, would respectfully oppose Senate Bill 597. Thank you for the time to offer comments. I'm happy to answer questions.
Questions? Yes, Senator Metzger.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Bissonnette. I guess a couple of things. First of all, you mentioned these aren't public monies, and I would argue severely with you they are public monies. And they have been ordered by the legislature to be collected from the ratepayers. And it is, as Legislative Council has indicated in talking about this bill, the tax is unavoidable. Therefore, it is a tax that we have directed. And we've also directed where it can go. That's why the Energy Trust has it. But we've also given it to two public bodies, and the ESD certainly, once it's in their hands, it is public money, and they are subject to all those types of rules and regulations and transparencies. I know that you've talked a lot about the value of the Energy Trust, and I'm not arguing the value. What I'm just arguing is those who are administering what has grown to be a very large fund, particularly on the industrial and commercial side, the level of transparency that any other public official in making these grants or distribution of funds should be subject to. And I would suggest that you may be adopting your own conflict laws, but there is no anybody who has any sanctions to enforce those types of rigors that we have when we have the State Ethics Commission. So I guess my question for you on that issue, because this is an issue of transparency, it's not on good works, is why do you believe that when you're dealing with such a massive amount of money that has been elicited from ratepayers at the requirement of the legislature, why those members should be subject to the same disclosures, limitations of gifts? I mean, Fred Meyer is getting $500,000. Why should a board member not be subject to the same gift limits if someone comes asking for that kind of money than anybody else, or Senator Farrell or any of the rest of us might have to be subject to?
Mr. Chair, Senator Metzger, regarding your first comment about LC opinions, there's also been LC opinions that noting that the legislature put a charge only on the customers of PGE and PacifiCorp, not on the customers of Idaho Power, another IOU in the state, and not on the customers of consumer-owned utilities, municipal utilities, people's utility districts, and rural electric co-ops. And because there is no other reason for utility customers, whether they're in IOU or COU territories, are utility customers. And so if indeed the legislature intended to put a sales tax on electricity, they would have put it on all customers. And so, again, there have been past LC opinions that have said because the legislature chose to differentiate the customers of PGE and PacifiCorp, it is, in fact, not a tax, and so cannot be treated as public money. And I'd be glad to provide the senator with copies of those letters that have been issued in past sessions. And, it could be that there's, other opinions afoot, but I'm not aware of them. In terms of the transparency for the board members, I cannot agree with you more. I think the differentiation is there is a policy decision in place that it is That these ratepayer funds are administered through an independent nonprofit organization that has enormous scrutiny on it and levels. And I have worked for nonprofits my entire adult life, and you know, even those that do receive other public monies, the Energy Trust is under scrutiny that I have not witnessed before, and so. So if you are saying that the PUC needs additional assurances, that is something that either through a budgetary note, either through a some kind of benchmark that the PUC does have in place and needs to add to, I think that we are happy to talk about that. But to differentiate the Energy Trust from any other of the literally hundreds, if not thousands, of nonprofit organizations that exist and operate in the state, I'm not sure we see the reason that that differentiation is being made.
One follow-up, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that, Mr. Bissonnette, but again, we're not talking about nonprofit. We're talking about those who are operating with money solely created from legislative action that we are eliciting from ratepayers, making public money. And I would also point out that this is not the only organization that receives money from a limited group that, quote, on your definition, is not a tax. For example, all the governing body members of the State Accident Insurance Fund, which is not, quote, any different than what you're talking about. Those monies are all generated by the business owners who pay into that fund. They're not from taxes of the general public. They're the payroll business owners that pay for their for that fund, and yet they're also subject to the disclosure requirements. So that is certainly a precedent. It's not just those that we collect from income taxes, but also from other taxes that are entrusted to the state to be spent wisely. That's my questions for now, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, can I have a brief follow-up? Again, I believe, though, that the fee is levied on all business customers in the state. There is no differentiation between business customers. And, again, not being a lawyer nor a tax expert, I believe that would be the differentiation.
Well, not to belabor this, Mr. Chair, but not all taxes go to every citizen of the state. We have all kinds of different levies and fees that are specific to other groups that put that into that type of category. And but keep in mind also that when we did 1149, as you know, this was created by the legislature. We directed the money to you by the legislature, just as we did ESDs. We can modify it and send it somewhere else, just as we did in the original creation, because that is the legislative authority that created it. You know, it's kind of giveth and taketh away. I mean, that is exactly what our job is to do, is decide, you know, how best to use those dollars based on what the legislature finds most beneficial.
Okay. Mr. Bissonnette, and then I'll go to one of the issues that I have is that I talked to the chair of the PUC commission, and you know, he informed me about the oversight, obviously, that the PUC has over the trust. He also informed me about the reporting but like a nonprofit of that nature that you have to do to the IRS in terms of conflicts of interest. And he also informed me of the internal sort of, I wouldn't call it maybe a code of ethics, code of conduct that has been. The problem I'm having is, in essence, it's an odd question, but is, I'll give you a comparison. I have the second smallest city in the metropolitan area, River Grove. It has 155, 160 households, about 300 people. Every one of the city councilors, the mayor, the planning commissioners for that city has to do an SEI. It's not actually even a big, in a lot of ways, particularly with the way that the committee is making this easier to comply with, it's not a particularly big requirement. Most people, when they get beyond the first few pages of the SEI, aren't going to have to fill out anything else, to be honest. What is the big problem in terms of, I would think in some ways that you would want to get as much public confidence in the transparency of the trust as you possibly could, even if you didn't feel it was appropriate for the legislature to make this decision. So I'm just trying to figure out It's the nature of the decision. I don't see it as being really a big hurdle.
Mr. Chair, thank you for that question. The transparency is not the issue, and the filing of the form is not not the issue. Where the issue is, respectfully, is, again, we have had a very distinct definition, and with due respect to the comments of Senator Metzger, of this being ratepayer money administered through an agreement from a utility regulator by a private nonprofit organization. And in observing other states that have tried similar models through public, through distinct public bodies and much more quasi-public bodies than the Energy Trust is as a private nonprofit corporation, that the ratepayer money dedicated to energy efficiency has been diverted to other other purposes in tough times. And while that is a an understandable short-term opinion in terms of from a ratepayer, from a energy policy, from a, frankly, even utility management perspective, is not a good idea. We need to continue to invest in energy efficiency at a sort of relatively constant level over a long period of time to get those benefits. And so, as I tried to underscore at the end of my comments, if there are ways to increase the transparency, we're happy to talk about them. The transparency, the onerousness of the task, the burden of reporting and filing is not the issue. If it was, the Energy Trust, wouldn't be able to operate because, it operates with a very high level of reporting, and a little more is not the issue. The issue is, frankly, making that distinction, that determination to a nonprofit organization that no other nonprofit is subjected to, and again, making the distinction between ratepayer money and public money.
Senator Burdick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you go through the process of how you award these grants? For example, some of the top awards were given, I see on your sheet, to Roseburg Forest Products, Fred Meyer, Safeway. How does this work? Do they make an application and then they make a presentation? Can you just run us through exactly how you approve these things?
Mr. Chair, Senator Burdick, I can on a high level. I am not representing the Energy Trust. I do not work for the Energy Trust. I am not on the board of the Energy Trust, although I am a member of the Conservation Advisory Council, and as the name implies, that group is made up of utility representatives, contractors, etc. There's a similar body on the renewable side, and so I can give you a sort of a high level of from my observations of, as a member of the Conservation Advisory Council and a longtime observer and attendee of the board meetings. And if that will suffice, I can
go ahead.
I can go with that understanding. The Energy Trust has a number of ways to get its word out there, both to residential customers, commercial customers, and to industrial customers. With commercial and industrial customers, again, neither of whom which I represent. I represent residential customers. There are pretty specific and tailored outreaches to either targeted industries or targeted business types where there have been identified significant energy savings. At the same time, there are also people connected with businesses, connected to industries, connected to trade associations who come to the Energy Trust and who say, we are interested in having a bunch of our members save energy, or somebody saying, I have an interest in my business saving energy. And so there will be an analysis done of the energy use by a particular business or, across an energy sector, and ways for that industry or that business to Activities for that business or industry to undertake to save X amount of energy. There will also be an estimate of how much it will take, what kind of investment it will take to save that energy, and there will be a comparison of what's the cost effectiveness. If it's particularly expensive, it may or may not sort of pass muster. And again, if you want a specific list of all of the criteria and the modeling that's used, there will have to be somebody else that can give you much more detail. But from a high level, there is that analysis done and that cost-benefit analysis done and say, yes, this is a good investment, or, you know, it's cost-effective up to this point, but after that, no longer. A similar kind of thing happens on the residential side, and that I can talk, much more detailed on, because I've gone through the process myself as a residential customer who does pay into the fund, and so had the energy trust contractor come do an energy review of my home, say, well, it looks like you need more insulation in your attic, your walls are not particularly well insulated, your basement could use some air sealing, and here's some complex fluorescent light bulbs, a low flow shower head, and aerating faucet head. Install these, and there's some quick savings right there. Here's a list of things that you can take to any contractor that you want, and have the work done to the extent that you can afford. And so on the residential side, there's a list of things, of activities like insulation, like lighting that the Energy Trust uses to say, yes, it's cost-effective up to this point, and that's what and the role of the incentive on both the residential and the commercial and industrial sides are to provide just enough incentive to sort of tip the balance. There has to be some money on the table up front from other sources, either from the customer's pocket, from tax credits, and others, in order for the project to go forward. The Energy Trust is not going to pay the whole way. Their goal is to find enough incentive, and what the incentive level is, to tip that decision over to, yes, we're actually going to do this project and save this amount of energy.
Okay, so you just in the example, follow up, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
For Roseburg Forest Products, they got $673,000 from the Energy Trust, and they also saved over 1 million kilowatt hours, which will save them money as well. So, wouldn't you agree this is a pretty substantial financial benefit to them?
To Roseburg. Sure,
yes.
But they also probably had to, and again, I have no idea of the specifics of that particular instance, but it is highly likely that they had to put some of their own money, and probably substantially more than they got from the Energy Trust, on the table. It is very likely that they got some sort of tax credit, either from the federal level or the state level, depending on the measures that were undertaken. They could have undertaken loans and that sort of thing, and borrowed. So it is certainly substantial, but I can't say it's the most substantial piece of money that's on the table energy savings.
To follow up, Mr. Chair, if this whole project also lined them up for a business energy tax credit, that merely improves the financial benefit to the company for doing this thing that will save them money. What kind of policies does the, if any, does the trust have in place to, for example, if someone from Roseburg Forest Products, and I just picked this as an example because it's at the top of your list, I'm not singling out a company, but if somebody from Roseburg Forest Products maybe wanted to entertain that person or maybe take them to Hawaii for a conference or something like that, what kind of policies are in place to deal with that?
There is a conflict of interest policy. I would have to go back. It's been a while since I've looked at that policy, but if there was, a sort of direct lobbying effort where there was, benefit proposed. I know that there, you know, I am pretty sure there would have to be some sort of, you know, communication either at a board meeting or something put, you know, on file. I'm not aware that, and then having known several of the board members over the years, I am not aware of any sort of lobbying activities that have ever been undertaken. But I'd be happy to look more, you know, in detail about that question and get back to you with more specifics than what I can answer now. And again, it's not my list that you have, so I'm not exactly sure the list.
But as far as you know, there are no sanctions if someone, you know, accepts a lot of gifts from one of these beneficiaries?
I can't say one way or the other.
Okay. I guess, you know, the point of my questioning, Mr. Chair, is I agree completely with Senator Metzger that this is public money. It's created, you know, it's a pool of money created in statute. There are many opportunities for, you know, for, you know, the same kinds of things that Senate Bill 10 was initially adopted to address. And I think I can't see why someone with control over this amount of money would be completely exempt from ethical requirements at the state, since this is a statutorily created program. And you can parse the definition of public funds, but there are a heck of a lot of ratepayers in Oregon, and this is a statutory program. And I just think it's in everyone's interest when you're dealing with this kind of money and this kind of benefit for commercial people, residential people, all people. When you're dealing with this kind of benefit, there is potential for shenanigans, and I think it's in everyone's interest to have as much transparency as possible. So I want to thank Senator Metzger for bringing this forward.
Okay. Mr. Bissonnette, did you care to respond at all? Or?
No, sir.
Okay. Is there anyone out in the vast number of people in this audience that wants to testify?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Since the Secretary of State Audits Division is here, I would have a question for them, since
yes.
They've been kind enough to come.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm Doug Drummond Conn. I'm the Interim Director of the Oregon Audits Division in the Secretary of State's office.
Thank you. Thank you for attending. Just had a technical question. If this bill moves forward with providing your office the same auditing function as what you would currently be able to do with the other government entities, either at our request or your own request, would this be a function that you could do, and do you see any questions, impediments, or the other hand, benefits of being able to have your office have some scrutiny of these expenditures and revenues?
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Metzger, we'd be delighted to have as much audit authority as possible. We think auditing is good wherever it happens, and pleased that if this expansion happens and there is a broadening of the state view of these funds, we're happy to have that opportunity to look at it. I don't see any unique difficulties with the issue. Our only concern for the record would just be that we don't want the legislature or residents and ratepayers to confuse a subject to audit provision to imply that in every year, in every case,
sure,
we will audit it. So
right,
given that it's permissive, given that it raises the potential for audits, we're happy to have that and broaden it within the authority that's already there, and to be able to make audit decisions based on risk and based on our judgment as to what to audit, as well as entertaining requests and questions from legislators and others. So no unique concerns, Senator, but just want to make sure that the authority isn't accompanied with an expectation that in a certain number of cases or at a certain frequency we would audit that.
Can I have another follow-up question,
yes,
Mr. Chair? In the question that Senator Burdick had of Mr. Bissonnette, an interesting point was brought up, and I thought it would be apropos for your department. Senator Burdick was talking about the business energy tax credit that we give also for energy conservation, carbon reduction, et cetera, which is general fund money. Credits are come out of the general fund to pay for these things. And because that is part of a state program currently, at least theoretically, we could request that your office audit that and where those credits were given, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Is that correct? The problem that I see, though, why I think your office would be a valuable tool here is that since you don't have that authority for the Energy Trust of Oregon, there is no way for the legislature to be able to line up how much public money is from ratepayers, from general fund, that may be going to a particular organization so we can see what the total income is. And I'll give an example. We raised the business energy tax credit last such to 50% of the cost of a project because we figured, you know, that's a lot, but that's kind of our threshold that we would want to invest. But we don't know that perhaps after getting 50% of general fund, they might be getting another 50%, say, from the Energy Trust and actually getting 100% of that project, and then perhaps the legislative edict on that might be different if we were able to at least line them side by side. So it would appear that if you had that function and we so desired, we could ask you to compare those two organizations and see if there was, you know, multiple draws upon these funds. Would that be accurate? If we were to request you to do so, I mean.
Right. Mr. Chair and Senator Metzger, I appreciate the intent, and obviously the more information or data we have to cross-correlate, cross-tabulate, the better information you'd get. In terms of the many not-for-profits and other sources of funds out there, I don't know that this by itself would allow, you know, a soup-to-nuts review of all of the funds that a particular recipient.
No, I didn't mean that. I guess, I'm sorry, I wasn't clear. I just mean, like, if we were to ask, would you look at the, if you were had authority over them as well as you do with our own Department of Energy and our Business Energy mm-hmm. Tax Credit, if we asked you to take a look at both of those and see where there were similarities in terms of application of either funds from the Energy Trust or from the general fund tax credits, then at least with those two entities, that would be theoretically possible.
Right. Yeah, Senator Devlin and Senator Metzger, yes, you'd have more data from which to compare. And I should add that that would be beyond not only the Secretary of State Audits Division capacity, but by making more data public, you'd be allowing other oversight personnel, citizens, yourselves, legislative, fiscal, and others, to do those kinds of comparisons. So an audit clause, you know, might be a different or more significant clause to look in detail. You'd also be permitting additional analysis by us or by other parties to do that kind of cross-tabulation. So, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for coming today.
Thank you.
Any additional questions? Seeing none. Thank you very much. Anyone additional that wishes to testify? Seeing none, I'll close the public hearing. Colleagues, you will be queried over probably the next day or two, not on Saturday, but we will probably have to schedule another meeting off schedule next week, again on our favorite topic, SB 30. So we'll be trying to figure out a time when everyone can meet. And with that, I think, yes, Senator Ferriero.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to introduce a couple of guests that I have today in the room.
I was wondering who would want to sit through this.
Who are those folks? This is Eric McNabb and Allie McNabb. They're here from the Dalles. Eric is a police officer in the Dalles, and he's here observing. And probably doesn't realize that he's also being observed by police officers as he sits there. Yeah. And there's Allie, who's a fifth grader at St. Mary's, I think. And we welcome them, and we told them that there would be a very interesting hearing at Rules today, and I hope they're not disappointed because it was a very interesting hearing.
Well, thank you for coming. I hope it was interesting. I don't think we're going to hold many more hearings on SB 30, but those hearings are not getting interesting anymore. They're just getting deeper and deeper. So, but anyway, thank you for coming, and with that, we are adjourned.
Woo-hoo.